And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice.
It's September. Another fantasy hockey season is just around the corner. Welcome to another episode of NHL Fantasy on Ice. Nick Alberga, Jay Kahn, Pete Jensen, and Chris Meaney with you on today's episode. Jake will be tackling stat projections for the 2025-26 season. How are you, buddy?
Oh, Nicky boy, it's good to have you back on the pod, finally reporting for training camp. We missed you on the show, and happy to break down some point projections with you and get it. Like, we're into September now, so let's crank it up. We're getting ready for fantasy hockey season here.
I've heard conflicting reports. They're still testing. You know, they're getting rid of the testing. I didn't want to be a part of that. That's why I missed the last couple weeks here on the podcast. But excited to get going. I can't believe the fantasy season is just around the corner. And I want to lock in here on Pete Jensen and Chris Meaney first off the top. Just your breakdown, stat projections. You guys have been doing some great work over at NHL.com over the month of August, Pete.
Yeah, appreciate that. You can find all the individual lists and the team-by-team projections for 32 and 32 on NHL.com/fantasy in addition to our full cheat sheet. I think Means, right, this was our first time working together in the preseason on this list. I was higher on some guys than Chris was, and our other guy, Troy Perlowitz, same thing. Like, we kind of converged all of our opinions. We looked at past career highs, averages over the past three or four seasons, any sort of uptick in off-season moves or teammates impacted. And also, you know, that final tiebreaker was kind of like, what do we hope for a player? It's not ceilings, the numbers on this list, but we kind of like take that ceiling into account.
The 32 and 32 was a blast. And now that, you know, Jake had said the calendar has flipped to September, it's time to, you know, start drafting really and prepping people to get the best possible teams. But it was a lot of fun. You know, you can go through all the teams. You can take a look at some of the breakout candidates, bounce back candidates, deep, deep sleepers, rookies to watch. So really looking forward to this episode. And welcome back, Nick.
Thank you. I just want to sit here and talk about contract year Connor McDavid, but I'll try my best not to. I think the conversation is best suited to start there, though, because a lot of people wondering who to draft first overall, and I'm sure we're going to have a lot of those conversations over the next month. But Jake, I wanted to have that conversation about the Art Ross Trophy, because I think a lot of people, when you don't look at the paper, you're like, okay, McDavid wins this every year, but it's been Kucherov the last couple years. So Jake, who gets the most points in the NHL this season?
I was going to raise your McDavid contract year to a Kirill Kaprizov contract year, but we can get into that in a little bit. I think he's a fascinating name to talk about as well. It's a great question, and it's not just as easy as saying, okay, McDavid's the best. He's going to go for, I think the boys have him projected for 135 points, something ridiculous like that, which is certainly a number that a guy like McDavid could hit. But McKinnon's capable of winning an Art Ross, and you just said it, Nikita Kucherov. I'm still leaning with Cooch, Nick. When I look at that Tampa offense and the usage for Nikita Kucherov, everything goes through him. Everything on the power play, obviously a lot even strength when he's out there on the ice. So I don't know about you. Do you want to go with tried and true Connor McDavid? I'm going with Nikita Kucherov. He's my guy for most points, Art Ross this year.
Return of the Mac is one of my favorite songs. I think this is the return of Connor McDavid. This guy, pound for pound, the best player on the planet. When he turns things on, he turns things on. It seems like every year he leads the playoffs in scoring, Jake. I have to go back to McDavid because, again, Kucherov won the last two. Who won the previous three before that? It was Connor McDavid. And I'm forecasting just a monster season. You see a guy who has been to back-to-back Stanley Cup finals. He's knocking on that door. I'm envisioning a monster, monster regular season for Connor McDavid this year.
It does feel like McKinnon could get one of these as well. Yep. And on a previous episode, I debated with the boys, and they tried to sell me for Nathan McKinnon at one in a fantasy draft, Nick, over Connor McDavid. So I think clearly by what you just said right there, you'd probably go McDavid. If you're predicting him for the Art Ross, you're likely taking him if you have the one pick. But is there any case to be made for Nathan McKinnon in that one spot? Do you worry a little bit about the fact that Mikko Rantanen's gone? I think we're going to talk a lot about Rantanen, the flip side, right? Him without Nathan McKinnon now. What can he do in Dallas? But there's this side to it as well. Nathan McKinnon now without Mikko Rantanen, one of his top players. Do you predict maybe a little bit of a dip in points because of that?
Probably not. McKinnon is so damn good, and we saw this when Natchez showed up following the trade last year. It really doesn't matter who he plays with. He just makes everybody better around him. Having said that, I will say for the first time in a while, Jake, I think there actually is a conversation to take who to take first overall. Having said that, I always resort back to like the highest ceiling, and by far it's Connor McDavid. But for sure, I think you're taking McKinnon in the top three. Like, you have to. And I think it's interesting too, like, when you look at goal scoring in fantasy hockey, because every, you know, strong fantasy hockey roster, you're going to have like your bona fide scores. Did you realize only 840 plus goal scorers last year? And I wonder if there could be more this time around. Only Draisaitl hit 50. The eight guys, Draisaitl, Nylander, Ovechkin, Thompson, Pasternak, Point, Connor, Gensel. We're not including names like Matthews, Kucherov, Scheifele. Would you take the over on some of these guys hitting 40 this time around, Jake?
I probably would. You get your tried and true guys that are basically going to do it every year, assuming health. Whenever we're having these conversations, we're assuming a full season. And then you're going to get your surprise guys that are going to hit 40 or guys that have never done it before. Like, I'm looking at some of these young guys. Can Connor Bedard do it? We thought he might do it last year. Can he step up, have that bounce back season? Could a guy like Macklin Celebrini take a huge leap? You look at this crop of young players. So you're probably going to get two, maybe even three surprise players in that conversation as well. But if you look at Austin Matthews' career particularly, Nick, and I know you follow this very closely, it's monster season, then kind of a injury plague down year, then monster season. So I'm projecting monster season again this year, especially with all the outside noise and Mitch Marner gone and everything like that. I think Matthews is going to jolt himself right back into that Rocket Richard race at the top again.
I love that you bring that up. I've got a really, really fun comp for you today. Of course, a lot of noise in Toronto still about Mitch Marner. He's now with the Vegas Golden Knights, and we love the value there. Vegas is probably the team to beat right now, maybe if not in the Western Conference, maybe in the NHL as well. Marner or Matthews, more points in 25-26. I want you to really think about this one, Jake.
I'm going to think about it, but I'm not going to think about it for too long. I'm going to take Mitch. I'm going to take Mitch Marner for more points. This is just what Marner does. He's going to rack up the assists. He's going to be in an offense with some finishers. Obviously, you've got Eichel there. You've got my guy Pavel Dorofeev as well. Again, we don't know exactly who Marner's going to be playing with, but we know he's going to be on the first power play. We know they're going to get him even strength looks with really good players as well. And I don't think there's going to be a dip in points just because he's going to a new team. I think that Vegas team is loaded. Regular season Mitch Marner is always money, and I think he's going to hit the ground running there in Vegas. Matthews is going to put up his fair share of points, Nick. We know this, but it's going to be leaning heavily towards goals. I'd still rather have Matthews in a fantasy league just because of his goal scoring and his shots on goal. But final points total by the end of the year, give me Marner by about 5 to 10 points over Austin Matthews.
I'm going to battle you, and that's what the NHL.com projection suggests as well. They're suggesting Marner at 100 points, Matthews at 91. But I'll go with Matthews. I like the attachment to Nyes, Nylander, maybe even on the top lines. Surely the power play. I mean, the power play is going to keep humming with or without Mitch Marner. Still conversations about who's going to run that power play. And to that point, I expect a bit of a transition for Marner with the Vegas Golden Knights. Like, I think it's important to stress that we think points, 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 but Jack Eichel just set the point record in a season for the Vegas Golden Knights, and it was 94. So nobody to this point has hit 100 points. And on top of that, Marner's only done it once, right? I think the conversation is always there where he gets to 100, he sniffed around it a bit. But I think it's a bit of a larger conversation that some may think. And to your point, I expect a bounce back of sorts here for Austin Matthews. It just depends how many assists is the guy going to get, right?
Well, yeah, and do the Leafs now become a little bit more top-heavy, right, with one of their big boys gone? Is there a lean towards, you know, the big boys that are left? And you make a good point, I think, about Vegas spreading it out, similar to what we see in Dallas and in Carolina, right? And that creates a good team. That's what these teams want. You want to be deep. You want to be able to roll three lines that can all score. So I'm still going to go Marner just because I think he's going to rack up the assists in Vegas. I think he's going to be very motivated, you know, to maybe prove some of these doubters or quiet some of that outside noise, however we want to frame it. Look, Matt, I do predict Matthews is going to be right there at the top of the goal scoring race. I would just take Marner in terms of points. I think he's got that, you know, 95 point potential in Vegas in year one.
It's Marner for me. I know he just had the first season, Nick, with 100 points, but I know that Austin is a great player as well, but Jack Eichel, you said it, he just had a career season, and I don't know, has Jack Eichel ever had a talent like Marner before on his line? I think about the Buffalo days, no, and I like Mark Stone, and Dorofeev had a breakout campaign, Hurdle's second line center. This was the second best power play in the NHL last year, so I think that these guys are going to be fantastic together, well over a point per game, and you said it with the assists. I just don't feel like Matthews is that playmaker, and Marner certainly is, so I feel like Matthews will score 40. We got him for 90 points. I think he's going to miss Marner. I think there'll be an adjustment there as well.
You know, it's a really interesting thing to think about, guys. Last year, Jack Eichel, 28 goals. His career high is 36. With one of the best dishers on the planet, Marner, now potentially on his line, does he take the leap maybe by 10? Like, does he go into the mid 40s in goals? And if so, then his point ceiling could be not just 100, but maybe even like 110 or something like that.
Pete, I was going to flip this to you. That's a really fun debate, too. Who gets most points on the Vegas Golden Knights? Is it Marner? Is it Eichel? Or is it somebody else?
I think it could be Eichel. I want to see his full potential on display. I mean, that 36 goals was from one of those lost seasons in Buffalo, if you could believe it. So, yeah, I just think that this is Vegas's best talent on paper that they've ever had. And they've had some, they've assembled some really nice teams with all their offseason trades and mid-season trades, right, guys? So this is going to be a lot of fun to watch. Both guys are projected for over 100 and could certainly far exceed that.
Nick, I wanted to throw this one at you. How much longer can we continue to draft Sidney Crosby in fantasy hockey and trust him? It just feels like this is timeless at this point. The boys have him projected for right at 90 points, which is kind of what he's been doing now for a handful of years. He always seems to slip into that second round of fantasy drafts and give you great value. Everyone thinks he's going to age out and the dip in production. Do you worry about what's happening in Pittsburgh? Are you still ready to pull the trigger on Sidney Crosby? Because honestly, at this point, he's just so good. He's so consistent. I'm ready to draft him and just kind of let him do his thing. But is there any concern that at some point it's going to dip for Sid?
I would say mild concern because of what's around him. The only team, and maybe I missed something in the last couple weeks since I've been over in Europe, that is actually gunning for Gavin McKenna. Okay, I don't know what Pittsburgh's doing. If you want a hot take, we haven't even had the hot take episode yet. I think Crosby's getting traded this year, guys. And ooh, make of that what you spicy. Will. And maybe he goes to a team like Colorado and he ups the value. But I think 90 points is fair because it's Sidney Crosby, but I wouldn't be shocked if it's more to like a point per game, around 82, which is pretty damn amazing still. But obviously, we're still projecting around 30 goals, 90 points. I think there has to be mild concern because there's even talk that Raquel and Rust are on the block, and we all know what this team is trying to do. Having said that, Jake, this guy has been so elite for so many years. Would it shock anybody to have, you know, an Ovechkin-type season he just had with the Washington Capitals, right?
I just feel like in every draft I do, I end up in that second round spot, no matter where I'm drafting. And Sidney Crosby's just sitting there looking at me. And there's some other, you know, enticing names, sexy names, young players. And I'm thinking, you know what? I'm just going to take Sid. And I know what I'm going to get. And he's going to be pretty durable. And he's going to give me those 90-ish points every year. So I get it. Pittsburgh is in a major transitional period right now. And maybe your hot take comes true. I think a lot of us would like to see it, him go to a contender and, you know, not play out his remaining years on a rebuilding Pittsburgh Penguins team. But as for a fantasy draft, I'm just taking Sid. I trust him. I don't care if he's playing on Pittsburgh or whatever team he's playing on. I still like Sid this year.
Yeah, don't overthink it. This time last year, we're talking about Ovechkin, and Ovechkin fell in drafts, you know, older, and thought that he was just finished and had nothing to offer from a fantasy hockey perspective. And I think people may think the same thing about Pittsburgh. Some of the points that you just brought up, Nick, are fair. Is Rust on this team? Is Raquel on this team? But looking at the Penguins overall, one of the worst teams in the NHL, but we still have them for five players with at least 60 points. So it's still going to be a good top six. They're going to play run and gun. They're going to give up a ton of goals. They're going to score. The power play is going to be decent. So don't overthink it. Crosby still has a lot to offer. And my goodness, if he does get traded to a team like Colorado or the Canadiens or somebody else, it's just like exciting and more talent, then you're going to have a winner on your hands.
I agree. And naturally, a really easy transition, Pete, to get into the conversation about Mr. 897. So the Great Chase is over. And I just wonder how this will, you know, look for the Washington Capitals after the remarkable year, and more specifically, Alex Ovechkin, Pete, when it comes to the fantasy world. 44 goals in 65 games last season. You're projecting 64 points this time around for Ovechkin.
And in the high 30s in goals, so that's something that's definitely feasible. I wonder about maybe not as much motivation. That said, if it's his last year in the NHL, he's going to try to go out with a bang. I hope he sticks around longer, but he hasn't decided that. Sounds like the same for Malkin, right? His contract is up, so those guys could be playing for something, you know, in their legacy here. But I think that Washington in general is prone to some regression here as a team. Logan Thompson in the win total, Alex Ovechkin in the point total, and some of these other guys, maybe even a Protas, a Dylan Strome. It's not a team I'm flocking to fantasy-wise. Maybe they peaked last year, Jake.
I think a lot of people are going to call for Capitals regression, and I think as a team, that makes a lot of sense. Are they going to win the Metro again and do what they did? It feels like a bit of a stretch. Everything was working for them last year. I don't see it being a huge drop off a cliff, though, Nick, and I still think Ovechkin, like, I get people are going to paint the narrative that, okay, he's past Gretzky, he's done that, he was more motivated last year. This guy loves to score goals, and I think he wants to set a ridiculous number so guys like Draisaitl and Austin Matthews and whoever comes up near the pipeline can't catch this guy. And Washington's a team that has a little bit more juice now. You know, we could talk about them as a contender status. I think that motivates Ovechkin as well. So I think he could go for 50 plus this year if fully healthy. I really do. I what makes us think he's all of a sudden going to stop scoring goals just off of one off season? I think he's still a motivated player, and I think he's ready to hit the ground running again this year.
I got to side with Pete here. That team came out of nowhere. A couple years back, they were dead to rights, and people were wondering if they were going to select first overall or be in that conversation. Then all of a sudden, the great chase happens. You know, luck is part of the game, let's be honest. There was a lot of luck, a lot of puck luck with the Washington Capitals. Goaltending was good. Defense was great. There has to be negative regression coming, a la like the Vancouver Canucks means. I got that feel to the Washington Capitals this year.
There are two teams, Washington and Winnipeg, right? Those are two teams that overachieved, and we were rolling through 32 and 32. It's like career season for all of these guys. But, you know, in terms of Washington, they're probably the team I believe in the most. You mentioned Vancouver or Winnipeg as teams that are going to regress, but there's a lot of talent on this Capitals team, and Strome is an underrated playmaker. That's a connection that worked really well with Ovechkin. Jacob Chychrun had a nice campaign. They get some nice young players like Ryan Leonard as a rookie, so they are pretty loaded offensively, and I don't know about 50. I love the call, Jake, but I would take the over on 39. Like, I think this guy can score 40, and a lot of people doubted him last year. Guys, didn't he fracture his leg? Nick, he fractured his leg, missed time, came back, and still scored at an elite pace. So he still has it, and he's a guy that can check a lot of boxes for you in terms of category coverage.
I want producer Bobby to clip this, because every year I seem to look like an idiot when it comes to the Crosby and Ovechkin conversation. These guys are timeless, and they don't go bad. Like, they're just always good. So that'll be a polarizing conversation as the season goes on. I want to get into the conversation about the President's Trophy, Jake. So we just talked about the Winnipeg Jets, sort of came out of nowhere. And this happens frequently where teams we don't expect, they just go on a crazy run in the regular season. Obviously doesn't work out in the Stanley Cup playoffs as much. But who do you think sniffs around on the President's Trophy this year? I think a team like Carolina could be ripe for the taking because nobody's really talking about them. I like the Oilers pickup. We like their blue line. The goaltending in the regular season solidified, I think. You know, a different conversation come the postseason, but I think Vegas could be in that convo, maybe even the Florida Panthers. But Carolina seems to be the team I'm drawn to right now, Jake.
Carolina's a good one, and I think going back-to-back President's Trophy, we just don't see very often. So no. I think we could almost cross a line through Winnipeg at this point. I think there's something to it where you win the President's Trophy, you know, have this great regular season, then you lose in the playoffs, and you're like, man, I got to do this again in the regular season. Obviously, we saw the Rangers miss the playoffs. I'm not saying that's going to happen to Winnipeg, but I don't see them right at the top again. There's a few horses, I think, at the Central that could all do it. I think Dallas could certainly be a part of it. I like your Carolina call. I just think they're so solid top to bottom and should win a lot of games. I think I could keep an eye maybe even on a Tampa Bay out in the Atlantic. I don't think Florida wins the President's Trophy. I just think they slow play the regular season again. How about Edmonton, Nick? Can Edmonton actually get off to a good start for once? They always do this thing where they dig a hole first few months of the season and then crank it up. Maybe the Oilers want to actually play well starting in October. I do have some concerns about the goaltending position there, but with a healthy McDavid and Draisaitl, they could just rack up the wins starting in October, finally.
The Oilers are a deep sleeper for sure, and I think you look at the whole McDavid situation, you look at Draisaitl, you look at the complementary pieces they've added. I think goaltending is going to be the big story. Do they have the goaltending necessary to win the President's Trophy? Like, for example, you look at Winnipeg, it really complemented that team when they had Connor Hellebuyck, and we all saw the awards he won last year and win after win after win. I just don't know if the Oilers have that benefit, but I would definitely put that team in the conversation. Again, it always seems to be a random team nobody's really talking about. The Oilers are not random. I think they're a really good team, but I wouldn't be shocked at all, Jake.
Well, yeah, and I do think too, looking at the Oilers and looking at the Jets as well. I was checking out the projections for goaltending wins from the boys, from Meany and Pete as well. Connor Hellebuck right at the top. Do we think Hellebuck's going to do it three years in a row, Meany? Like, I mean, at some point, maybe you're going to have that year where, you know, you just have an off year, team's not maybe playing as well in front of you. I think we agree Hellebuck's the best of the best right now when it comes to goaltending, and he is the most solid, most consistent. But could we maybe get a year where somebody takes the torch from him?
It's possible. You know, doing the projections for the Jets, I was thinking, man, can we give this guy 40 wins again? It's like, maybe we'll just give him 39 because of some of the regression, and they'll lose Nikolaj Ehlers, and maybe overall they score fewer goals. But there's some goalies, you know, Jake Ottinger's the guy that comes in mind, new coaching regime in Dallas. Can he take the next level? How about Mackenzie Blackwood? That's a team we haven't talked about, Colorado. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. Vegas, Carolina, Edmonton, I think they'll struggle out of the gate. I really do. Like, they have before in the past, and they've lost a lot of depth too. So there's some question marks inside their top six that I have. But the Avs, this time last season, when you guys are debating between McKinnon and Kucherov and McDavid, this time last year, Lehkonen was hurt. I know Durant's not on the team, but he was hurt. Nichushkin wasn't on the squad. So now you have a Gabriel Landeskog that's healthy. You have a Brock Nelson first full season with the Avs. They're loaded inside their top six. And Mackenzie Blackwood is a goalie. If he could just stay healthy, Nick, he's a guy that I wouldn't be shocked if he won 40 games and had a solid ratio across the board.
Guys, who do you think has the best goalie tandem if you're looking to handcuff two different guys from the same team and hope that they are one of those President's Trophy contenders? For me, the top of the list is Colorado with Mackenzie Blackwood having 35 win potential. And then you would expect probably about 15 from Scott Wedgewood equals 50 wins. Whether they're healthy or not, I think they'll be in the President's Trophy conversation for sure with that tandem.
Nick, before you do it, I'm taking the Maple Leafs goaltending tandem. I'm taking Stolarz and Joe Woll. I think some are going to say there's going to be a dip for the Maple Leafs, and it could be true with Marner gone. I still think this team is really solid, loaded with stars up front. I like the blue line enough, and those are two great goaltenders. And I don't know who's going to end up as the legit guy when it's all said and done. It might really be an even split between the two, but I'm going or Woll and Stolarz. Are you going anywhere else?
No, that would have been my answer as well. I think when it comes to goaltending and fantasy hockey, it's becoming harder and harder to find that bona fide guy, and that's why, getting back to the conversation about wins in a season, it's tough to deviate from Connor Hellebuck because he plays so damn much. Like, who the hell's the backup? Eric Comrie? Like, that's the most cushiest job in the league, with all due respect to Comrie. He played really good hockey last year. But you know Hellebuck's going to play a billion games, and that sets him up for a billion victories. The closest to him last year was Vasilevsky, who could be in the conversation at 38 wins, but Hellebuck at 47, Ottinger at 36. I just want to throw out there as well a couple guys I expect bounce backs from. Swayman in Boston, Shesterkin with the New York Rangers, and Ilya Sorokin with the New York Islanders. I think it's we'll have this convo a lot, Jake, over the next little while, but it's such a volatile position, man. You have no clue what's going to happen maybe outside of Hellebuck.
Well, and I think there's a few teams you can target. Now, take your pick. They're not all going to bounce back, but if you're a believer in one of these teams and what they've done as a franchise, it's the Rangers, it's the Boston Bruins, and it's the Nashville Predators. Maybe one or two of those teams bounce back. Maybe none of them, but I have a feeling at least one bounces back and we could find some fantasy value. And when we're specifically looking at goaltenders, you got some good goaltenders on all of those teams, right? You mentioned Igor bouncing back. I'm kind of with you there. I'm a little bit in on a Boston bounce back as well. I think they're being written off too quickly. Nashville, less so. We talked about it on some previous episodes. I don't know if you feel differently, Nick. I just think that might be a bad roster. It might just be an old roster, and Barry Trotz might have messed this thing up. But UC Saros, we know, is a talented goaltender. Can he maybe bounce back as well?
Again, unless I missed something in the last couple weeks, I called this one of the most disappointing NHL offseasons in NHL history. I'm not putting it down, but not much happened. So unless Nashville did something polarizing over the last couple weeks, I agree with you. Like, it's great to have a goaltender. It's great to have Roman Josi. And I know they pick up my guy Nick Hague from the Vegas Golden Knights, but it was relatively quiet for that team. So I wonder, with all, you know, a lot of teams, I think, getting better slowly and surely. But it's always a fun, riveting conversation when you look at a team with a goaltender, because it's so hard to find that goaltending. So Yu Saros, can he step up? But I think in general, like, even thinking about like the Anaheim Ducks, Detroit, I know you guys had this conversation, Pete, with Dostal. Like, John Gibson is a guy I have on my Keeper League roster. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to expect. I don't think Detroit got any better either, Pete.
No, slightly. I mean, they're going to be, they've missed the playoffs by five or fewer each of the past two seasons. Maybe that gets them over the hump. It's interesting when you look at the Eastern Conference, like the top three for the Metro seem pretty solidified. Maybe the Rangers get in as either the third or a wild card if one of those other teams deals with injury. But like in that Atlantic division, there is a lot of competition and there's only a maximum of five spots. So that's why I don't love Detroit's chances of getting into the playoffs. And I also, like Means was talking about this too, is he going to be able to stay healthy, Gibson, for like 45, 50 games? I would lean towards no. I hope he does, but it's just been the recent trend.
It's funny you say that. I was on Yahoo last night looking at my Keeper League roster, and I kid you not, beside Gibson's name, it says day-to-day. So I'm like, what? This guy got hurt in his sleep?
I mean, we have him penciled in for 25 wins, and what's the ceiling look like for Gibson? He had a sneaky good save percentage last year, but Detroit didn't get better. Across the league, you look, we talked about Carolina, we talked about Vegas. Those were already two good teams. Ehlers and Marner, can those two players push those teams over the top? Other than that, the teams that improved, the Canadiens, the Ducks, these aren't Stanley Cup contenders. You know, the Canadiens will probably make the playoffs. The Ducks may hang around. Utah's a team. We're talking about goalies. We have Vemelka for 30 wins. Utah's loaded inside the top six. They're going to score a ton of goals. Health is always a concern in goal for goaltenders in fantasy. But, you know, 30 wins is pretty respectable. And Vemelka's going to go well outside the top 17, 18 in terms of goalies off the board.
I like that. I would even throw Samuel Montembeau's name. And since we're talking about the Montreal Canadiens, I did label that team as the winner of the offseason. I don't know if you want sort of that distinction, but I think they have it for me, picking up Dobson. Outside of Vegas, of course, I think they'd be in that conversation too. But Jake, what are you thinking about the Montreal Canadiens in terms of wins? Even Montembeau, I think, is an enticing piece. I think there's a lot of really fun names on that roster that I'd love to have in fantasy hockey this year.
It's hard not to get excited about this team, Nick, and the potential that they have, right? Demidov, first full year, and a legitimate first line, finally. Can Slafkovský break? Like, Slafkovský's been decent the last couple years, but can he break out and go to another level? I think we're looking at that. You know, what's Patrick Laine got left? Is he going to be hitting some bombs on that power play as well? Now Noah Dobson comes over. Now, maybe the concern is Lane Hutson, great rookie season. Does he have that sophomore slump, right? How many times have we seen that with young defensemen? Great first year, then second year, bit of a learning experience. And how are you treating that debate in fantasy hockey? I know I saw the boys had Lane Hutson projected for more points than Noah Dobson. I would agree with that because I think he's got that PP1 spot to start. Does that mean you're not drafting Dobson, or do you still have some interest in him even though it looks like he might be PP2?
Look, Pete's probably better suited than anybody in this conversation to have that convo about Dobson. I think he's overrated offensively, okay? With exception of a couple years ago where he had that monster year, I think people view Dobson higher than he actually is. All around, he's an incredible defenseman. But I think you watch Lane Hutson play and you're like, that guy is a natural power play quarterback. Like, I was laughing when Montreal picked up Dobson. Habs fans on Twitter are like, oh, we finally got that one-timer threat on the power play from the right side. The guy had two power play goals via one-timer, like, in his career or even last year. So, like, I just don't, I'm tempering my expectations, Pete, when it comes to Noah Dobson. And I think if you had to ask me, which we're having this convo right now, I'm for sure taking Hutson over Dobson in fantasy hockey.
I agree. I think last year was a step back for Dobson, both offensively and defensively. He had a lot of bad giveaways and stuff that doomed the Islanders a little bit as they missed the playoffs. But Montreal's offense overall is going to be outstanding. Hutson, I could see him getting 70, 75 points in a hurry this year. I always like this time of year to look at a guy that has never hit the 100-point mark before and try to project it. And that guy for me, I'm not going to say with certainty, but with a lot of confidence, is Nick Suzuki. Ooh. He got up to 89 points last year. He's getting better and better every single year. Doesn't matter who he plays with. He's got the goal scorers with Demidov and Caulfield and Slafkovský, the power play guys with either Hutson or Dobson. This guy's locked and loaded. He's going to hit 100 points this season, in my opinion.
Yeah, Suzuki's progressed over the last three or four seasons and tied for 13th in the NHL in points. And if you look at January 1st on, he was 5th in the NHL in points, just two behind Matthews and McKinnon. That's elite company. And you feel like this team offensively is going to take a step forward. You talked about earlier, Nick, guys who can maybe score 40, Cole Caulfield had 37 last year. It was tied for 13th in the NHL. So those guys are going to continue to get better. Slavkovsky is going to continue to get better. Demidov's going to help power play one. But Dobson, no question, is, in my opinion, will be on the second power play. And his usage rate will drop, right? He was got a lot of minutes with the Islanders, top power play. He has had 10-plus goals in each of his last four seasons. But you remember, Hudson didn't start the season on the first power play last year. It was Matheson. So it took 20 games or so for St. Louis to make that switch. He's going to start on the first power play. So the sky's the ceiling for him. We have him for 70 points, which is tied for fifth among defensemen. But Demidov we have for 62, 63 points, around 26 goals. Jake, what do you think about that projection? Because that's a guy that people are probably going to reach for in fantasy.
I don't know what to do with Demidov, but I can't wait to watch this kid. He looked so fun, but it's such a small sample size. I don't want to get overexcited. And I do tend to think people overdraft these players to the point where I don't end up with them on my roster because I'll take a shot on them, but I'm not going to take a shot where most people are. And speaking of young players, Nick, this is your first time on the pod for this season, your first preview episode. So you're going to get your first crack at, I think, a debate we're going to have right up to the fantasy drafts, probably beyond fantasy drafts, and maybe years and years after this as well. Celebrini or Bedard this year? I looked at the point projections. The boys have Celebrini a little higher than Bedard. I think a lot of us are higher on Celebrini based on what we saw last year, but are you still in for Bedard, or are you just all in on the cool kid out in California, Macklin Celebrini?
I got to go with contract here, Connor Bedard. I love Celebrini. I just think there is higher upside offensively to Bedard. Untapped potential, if you will. Again, I what do they do this offseason? Are they getting better? Like, I just don't know. I think everybody's timid because of Gavin McKenna next year. I'll put it that way. But I think, and I said this last year at this time, I think it's breakout season for Connor Bedard. Sometimes it takes longer than others. Like, we had that McKinnon conversation. If you guys recall, it took a couple years, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's why they took, you know, McKinnon where they did. And I think there'll be that day where we look back and laugh and be like, oh, we doubted Connor Bedard, so it would be Bedard. But I think it's really close. Like, Celebrini really, really impressed in year one. You know he's only going to get better, too.
Well, as much as I like Celebrini more than Bedard as we stand right now, from what we just watched this past season, if people are going to treat Bedard like an afterthought or let him slip in fantasy drafts, then I'm totally with you. Yeah. I see. And look, Chicago's power play was actually decent last year. That was the one saving grace for just a horrible season for the Blackhawks, was their power play was actually pretty good. They got a crop of young defensemen. Maybe someone can step up and quarterback that PP as well. So I hear you. I think the goal scoring potential is there for Connor Bedard, even though I'd still lean Celebrini if Bedard slips, I'd be willing to take a shot there. Means
it's been really fun to watch Bedard in the offseason on the ice. He just seems like a motivated guy, and I think, Nick, you said it, a lot of people have already written him off. I love the comparison to Nathan McKinnon. Some people were talking about him being a bust in the first couple of years of his career, and then all of a sudden he matured and he took off. So this may be the biggest buy low candidate in dynasty leagues and keeper leagues before he does go off. Ryan Donato had a breakout season last year. The top six is a little bit better, and Jake, you mentioned it, you know, some young defenders on the blue line like Sam Renzel, who only played 9 games. He had 5 points, and they did have a top 5 or top 10 power play last year. So I prefer Celebrini because of the shot volume in fantasy, and he's surrounded by probably some better players. But Bedard is in for a breakout campaign. Buy now while you can.
Frankly, I'm more curious to see who runs these two power plays in San Jose and Chicago. And speaking of the blue line, Pete, why don't we wrap by talking about the blue line? It always seems to be Cale Makar's blue line. He always gets the most points at 92 last year. We saw the evolution finally of Zach Werenski last year, almost sort of came out of nowhere and had a monster season with 82 points. Quinn Hughes at 76, Dahlin at 68, Bouchard at 67. Can Makar get to 100 points, Pete, and do you have him as the guy to beat in terms of overall production on the blue line in fantasy hockey this season?
We do have him as the guy to beat right now. A couple other guys to keep in mind. So Adam Fox, New York Rangers, always has a high point floor. He's going to be playing on the top pair with Gavrikov, who's going to help Shesterkin. He's going to help Fox. Those guys are going to bounce back to some extent. So I really like the buy low appeal, bounce back appeal of Adam Fox in that Rangers offense with Panarin and JT Miller, etc. Also, Thomas Harley was a guy in the postseason for the Dallas Stars. He's got that attachment to Rantanen. Heiskanen's more of like becoming an all-around force, and I feel like Harley really took that step forward, and he's the goal scorer, right? Like, there's few defensemen better goal scoring wise in the entire NHL, whether it's edge stats or regular stats, than Thomas Harley. So two guys that I would expect to take further steps forward compared to last year.
That was one that really jumped out to me when I looked at the defense points projections here was Thomas Harley, where he was, and then scrolling down, finding Miro Heiskanen, a guy that I thought at one point could win a Norris Trophy. Not that he can't do it, but we know you got to put up points to win a Norris Trophy in this league, guys. You could defend your mind out all season long. If you don't put up those big boy points, you're not winning the Norris. So I mean, are we out on Miro Heiskanen as the offensive guy in Dallas now? Is there still a path there? I'm with Pete. Harley's the guy. He's the finisher. I totally see the path for him as the top guy in terms of leading that power play in Dallas. But man, it seems like there might be a little bit of value in Heiskanen still.
Yeah, there is, but this is on me. I did Dallas in the projections. I wanted to put Harley at 70 points. Like, this guy's a stud, and he overtook that power play last year before Miro Heiskanen got hurt. This is nothing on Heiskanen. He's a great player, all-around defenseman, but Harley has that shot. He's got the skating ability like Miro Heiskanen has, and you have, you know, a loaded power play there with Wyatt Johnson finally got first power play minutes last year, and you got Mikko Rantanen. So Harley's a guy that I think could have 70 points, and I want to shout out Shea Theodore as well. He could have a career season, top power play in Vegas. No Alex Pietrangelo this season. There's always been time where they juggled, you know, Pietrangelo and Shea Theodore on that first unit. It's just going to be Theodore. Hannifin could have a breakout campaign. All it would need is 50 points for him. And then Mikhail Sergachev, right? Talked about Utah, loaded offensively, bringing in JJ Paterka and some of their young players like Cooley and Gunther. I think that Mikhail Sergachev's a guy, I don't think 70 points, but he could live in the mid-60s and certainly return value on draft day.
Boys, excellent job. NHL.com/fantasy, where you can check everything out. And Jake, hard to believe it. Next time we talk next week, we're going to be less than a month away from puck drop on the regular season. Can you believe that?
As soon as Labor Day weekend passes, it becomes real for me. I start to get that itch. It's getting a little chillier outside. The sun is setting very, very early. That, to me, means it's hockey season, fantasy hockey season, time to get those drafts ready to go.
And don't forget as well, the last couple of episodes, you can check that out as well. We'll have a full preview for you guys moving forward. Lots of fantasy coverage over the next little while to get you set for your draft. So more coming your way on Monday. Thank you to producer Bob Bender, for Jay Conn, Pete Jensen, and Chris Meaney. I'm Nick Alberg. You've been listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice. We'll talk next week. Take care.